Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grind some tape.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome in to the Film Guy Network on a fabulous Monday evening. Glad to be back with you guys tonight for what is set to be an absolutely loaded show. I want to start today's show with the topic of discussion previous to the show starting live. And I want to put this up for the chat to decide. Is T-Pain the only hip-hop artist from the mid-2000s whose music has been more appreciated as of late than it was when it was out? I think so. I think we agreed upon that.
Yeah, I tried to think of ones that I couldn't come off the top of my head. Now, surely Chad or someone will
probably Chad will give us something. Chat, that's the challenge. Shout out to 47,000 of you suckers, by the way. Oh my God, 47,000 of you. I thought about this. We just passed over, by the way.
Very nice.
Claps to us. I thought about creating a visual gag for 100,000, like a visual shtick. Like maybe marbles. Marbles too many.
It's a lot.
To me, that's a lot of marbles. Maybe something.
Balloons.
But we could like put it somewhere in the studio.
Balloons all
and
over
just,
the studio.
And literally just like drop a little bean in there every time. Every time it happens, maybe we just do a bean for every 1,000 or something, or like a Skittle for every 1,000. I don't know. We need a physical thing. What?
You can't eat the Skittles if we do that.
No, I can't. I can't. But I'm, you know, special diet can't be on.
Bad news, guys. Just lost another 1,000.
But anyways, I wanna think about that. We'll kick it around. Idea. I want a visual like volume bar of we're about to reach a goal.
You know what I mean?
I want the audience to see that as well. Welcome in. We got a great one for you. I got a week's worth of takes and ADD thoughts to throw at you guys tonight. Thomas Castellanos out here talking mad crazy.
My God.
Out here talking reckless so much where it was like, these ain't real, are they? They were. So we're going to talk about that tonight. Should Tennessee be worried about their recruiting class? I don't know, but we're going to talk about it tonight. I think we're venturing into the yes, be worried territory because it is almost July. College football playoff format being just piled up and thrown out thanks to the SEC winning a pivotal debate that I think we on this channel have won on behalf of the SEC as well, or at least gone to bat for it. Speaking of going to bat, we're going to talk about that other conference. The Big Ten win totals coming tonight as well. We're going to give you three locks, three stayaways, and three coin flips on those Big Ten, win totals out there in Vegas. But I'm going to start tonight, non-ironically, with my Elite 11 takeaways. Now, we did two shows out there in LA. It would have been multiple shows had the Wi-Fi not been absolute dog poo-poo. All right, so I would have uploaded more and more, but we're going to bring you our final thoughts tonight on the show. And here's how I thought we should do this, okay? Instead of Brooks just gallivanting on for 15 minutes about his takes from the week, I thought we'd create a new segment called Elevator Evals. All right, so here's how this is going to go. The boys have split the roster up between the two of them. They're going to throw names at me. I'm going to give you 30 seconds of an elevator ride on what that prospect, or rather who that prospect is. Are we ready for elevator evals?
Oh,
let's
yeah.
Do it. Do we like this, by the way? I think this might work.
We're about to find out.
We're about to find out. Elevator evals. Here's the shtick, okay? Fast as possible. You got to push me here. All right, here we go.
All right, Dia Bell from committed to Texas.
Dia Bell, the rare combination of both, like, fundamentally sound and holy shit, this guy's got horsepower. I see two types of football players come to the Elite 11 every year. One guy, all the traits in the world. Holy hell, look at all the flashes, but you know the floors down there. We're going to talk about a couple of these guys in a second. Dia Bell, the rare combination. Dude's got juice. Dude's clean as a whistle. Like, very clearly has been professionally trained very early on. Obviously, dad is Rajah Bell, former NFL or NBA veteran. Made the decision early on, I'm going to be an NFL guy. They have poured resources in it, and you can see it in Dia Bell. My number one coming away from the Elite 11.
Florida Gators commit Will Griffin.
Ooh, a little bit of a surprise, okay? From the ear, throws like a catcher, all right? I don't know if I necessarily love it from like 25 out. You can see it kind of strain, ball kind of wobble on him. However, Very quick, very efficient, very accurate. When on the first live show or the first show from LA that we did, we talked about those random golfers that you'll play with every once in a while where you're like, golly, that swing is awful. You beat your ass. 85 up and down the damn course all day long because he knows his swing. Will Griffin knows his swing. It ain't the prettiest, though.
Bo Bentley.
Oh, man, talk about a swing that's pretty. The back end of it, don't necessarily like this. A little bit of a dipper on Bo Bentley. Now, what is news to me on the Bo Bentley thing, you learn more and more when you go out and see this. This guy didn't play a lot of quarterback first 2 years of high school, was sitting in the pine. But instead of just sitting, waiting his turn, you know what he did? Return punts, return kicks. Got tape from his sophomore year of him housing punt returns. Okay, this kind of athlete this guy is. Georgia's comparison for him during the recruiting process was Baker Mayfield. I like it. A lot of those competitive intangible traits as well. I do think we're a little bit lengthy, though. Got to tighten it up.
Houston commit Keyshawn Henderson.
Holy shit. You talking about high-end traits. My God. All right, now, I understand it. I didn't get it when I went, like, going out there. I was like, I'm excited to see this guy throw because he's rated in that top five, okay? Rated in that top one, you know, top 10, top two quarterback overall. Didn't necessarily understand it based off the tape. When you see this in person, you'll get it. That ball has different life. Now, what I will tell you, and I'll get kind of side angled on you here, guys, from here, all right, from this layback position to release point, I don't know if I've seen a younger man pull it harder. All right, this is violent from this point right here to the release point, and you can see it. Immediate life off the ball. Throws a real, real tight one. Super nose point. I don't even know how to explain it without being too football nerdy, but very, very violent through the stroke.
Faison Brandon.
Ooh, one of these guys, okay? Very, very clear to me. Seven-step drop. I had to work on it when I came out here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew I was going to have to do this stuff I'm not comfortable with at this camp. Still looked relatively uncomfortable with it. However, feet in the ground, base clear, base solid. I'm comfortable. Few better arms in this class than that one right there. Probably the strongest, most horsepower eval on this list for me. Great, great prospect. I think he fits perfectly for what Tennessee does.
Penn State commit Troy Hunn.
Ooh, Troy Hune, my man from Southern California. I think it's a San Diego guy. You talk about chicken and rice. Okay, this is a high floor eval on my man Troy Hune, okay? 6'3", maybe 6'4", borderline. Okay, right on there, 6'4". 225, ain't the greatest athlete in the world, doesn't have the biggest arm in the world, but consistently a guy. You know what I mean? Just flat, good line, know what he's going to be. Don't expect too many highs, don't expect too many lows. Good high floor on that football player.
Sounds like a Penn State quarterback.
Sounds like a Penn State football player. He's not going to make the mistakes that Drew Aller does, but he's not going to wow NFL prospects like Drew Aller does.
Travis Burgess, in UNC commit.
Man. You're talking about high ceiling on this kid. This kid, now I'm privy to this one because he's right down the road, Grace, about 45 minutes from the studio, and a teammate of mine from college, two of them coach him. So I got a different little insight on this one. I've seen him since he was a freshman at Grayson, and he was already like 6'4". He's 6'5", 220 right about now, and moves like a gazelle. So really, really great athlete. Not good athlete, great athlete. Now, the thing about Travis, we talked about throwing motions. This one has constantly improved and constantly tightened up throughout his career as his performances have as well, okay? Rough and rocky start last year to the start of his first year starting as a high school quarterback through those first four games. Last nine, lights out, including a state championship. Was the best player, I felt like, on that state championship field in 6A, 7A.
Matt Poniatowski.
Oh, my man Poniatowski. This one's committed to Boise State, correct?
He is currently uncommitted.
Currently uncommitted. Lil Tozy is my man Poniatowski, okay? And what do I mean by that? We got one ready, right? Okay. We're going to tease you here. Okay, we got one ready. All right, Lil Tozy on the delivery. When he takes this drop, he's all up here. And I can't quite figure it out. I talked to a couple trainers about it. It's not good because when we come set, eventually we have to pull our body this way, right? I mean, even when we take our drop and we're super toesy, we're not on an instep, all right? We're not in the ground, all right? We're on our toes. We want to be in the ground. It would be almost like trying to swing a golf club standing on your tippy toes. Not ideal. However, relatively accurate football player. I think right in that mid-major range, probably not a P5 guy, in my opinion, or a P4 guy, but good football player.
Texas A&M commit Hellman Kasuga.
Just right, 6'1", 210, accurate, flat line for me. Just a flat line eval, flat line performance. Okay, no lows, no highs. But the difference between him and Troy Hune's 6'4". You know what I mean? I do like his tape from a competitive standpoint. okay, plays the game the right way, in them shorts and t-shirts things, probably not going to flash on you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Very similar email to Bo Bentley. Mm. Very similar eval.
Clemson commit Tate Reynolds.
Oh, you talking about a Clemson eval. You watch that first four clips, and you're like, God dang, this dude competes his balls off. Not all that gifted, you know? Not all that gifted of a football thrower of the football, but rocked up, super tight delivery because he's rocked up, probably 225 pounds right now, 4.65 athlete. Mm. And he going to run over you. He ain't going to run around you. He going to run over you.
My favorite name of the competition, Briggs Cherry.
Hold on. I want to go back to my man Tate. You know what I told an Elite 11 coach? I said his tape reads like, I love Jesus. You watch his tape and you're like, that kid loves Jesus and ball. That's what it is. Clemson, all over it.
Tim Tebow?
Ah. Yeah. Not as dippy.
Well, he's overrated,
just,
right?
Just really tight.
I didn't say that.
So are you calling him overrated?
Really tight from the top of the shoulder collar. Not from the ear, just like from there. Interesting.
Yeah, Louisville commit Briggs Cherry.
If Briggs had just like a schmizzion of athleticism, he'd be a problem.
Well, he's going to the QB Whisperer.
But that's true. But I don't know if the Whisperer can, hey, we need to get better in the athleticism department. I don't know if he whispers athleticism into his football players, okay? But from a pure passer standpoint, Briggs Cherry made my Elite 11. You're going to find out because great pure passer.
Mm.
Great pure passer. Just a very limited athlete.
Oscar Rios.
Oh, my man, Oscar. Going to commit soon. Don't want to spoil that one. Know where he's going to go. Don't think it matters for this show's standpoint. He was my kind of like dark horse going into this based off the tape. Super whippy through the motion. Like real quick through it. The problem is when you see him in person, might be 177 pounds soaking wet.
Oh.
If we can find 205 pounds in that body, we're going to be really, really good. Where he's going, ironically, has a 6'6" version of this.
Mm. Darian Coleman, Miami commit.
Just one of those guys. We talk about Rios. Can you get me to 205? Darian Coleman, man, from an immediate life standpoint, 20 yards and in, that ball jumps. However, he is 5'10". He's 165 pounds. I know what you're going to say. No measurements.
Yeah.
The only guy on the list with no measurements.
Mm-hmm.
Eyeballing. 5'10 and a half, maybe, 165 pounds, maybe.
Oh, wow.
But, legit burner, legit 4'5 flat guy, maybe in college, 4'4A guy. But, dude, gonna have to play at 190 pounds. Mm-hmm. You're just gonna have to find a way to do it. I don't know if the frame will hold it. Like, chat saying Bryce Young, I feel like Bryce Young's bigger. I feel like, wasn't Bryce Young almost 200 pounds at the combine?
Near it.
But it was a lot of water weight. Probably played at 190.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot thicker than 165.
Okay.
And you can see it. And by the way, Bryce Young's ball did not flail on him 20 yards out. This one does. When you see it in person, you don't have the muscle mass that you need shows up when you watch it.
204 pounds for Bryce Young.
Water weight, played at 195.
Yeah.
190. At 5'10?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Iowa State commit Jet Thomaya.
Oh, Jet Tomala actually flipped to Alabama. So that's just the old Elite 11 roster. This is the Alabama commit, okay? Very similar eval to me as Briggs Cherry, but with a little bit longer of a motion. But a better athlete, okay? A little bit better of an athlete. Alabama fans corrected me on this one. Apparently, we got Jet Tomala hoop tape. Will you check this on me? Apparently, we got yam yams from Jet Tomala. Like 2 feet off, like, you know, 2 feet, yam yam. One of those, okay? Like, ooh. I got legit bunnies.
Landon Duckworth. Sorry. I didn't know you were done or not.
No, that one. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm done. Landon Duckworth. Speaking of bunnies, I think that's what Jonathan's brain just did for him. One of these high-ceiling football players. The thing about Faison to me, about Landon to me that's going to get real scary is that he's showing signs of consistency, which I think was the one thing missing from him. The highs are great. Like, when you watch Landon Duckworth's ceiling, it's like, oh, my God, who's going to touch this football player? But the lows are some of the lows of the lows when it comes to these high-level football players. That floor is getting brought up ever so slightly from Landon Duckworth. What do we got on the hoop tape? Did we find it?
I'm watching a fast break right now. Oh, yeah.
He one of them?
Yeah, he got some arms to him.
Riley Leonard?
I wouldn't put it at that caliber, but I've only seen one dunk.
Okay.
Still checking it out. That's just a steal.
All
right there.
But we have a dunk on the highlight tape.
We have a dunk.
So we are not a statuesque quarterback if we have a dunk. That's all it takes. Who's
Duke,
next?
Duke commit Terry Walker.
Yeah, it's a kid that, you know, every once in a while you watch the junior tape and then you see him in person, and this was one of those kids. There's one or two of these every year where I have to walk up to the kid and say, how much have you been working? Because you look totally different than your junior tape. This is one of those ones. If you watch this junior tape, it's below the shoulder column. It's like that. He's like pushing the ball, almost not even Phillip Rivers. Phillip's like from the shoulder this way. This one's almost like looping underneath like that. It's very, very weird. You watch him in person, it's cleaned it all up. I think this is an ascending football player from Duke.
Arizona State commit Jake Fett.
Yeah, didn't have a great week. Didn't have a great week, but I do love the tape, and I love what Arizona State is doing. So I saw Arizona State on the eval. I see 6'2", 200 pounds. I see Texas high school football, okay? And I'm like, oh, you went out of your way to go to Texas, and I would imagine beat out some dudes to pull out a 4-star out of the state of Texas to come to Arizona State. Immediately, I was like, this dude's, I'm about to watch a baller. Like, no matter what, on the tape at least. The in-person stuff, the ball was shaky all week, and I'll get to that in a second. But the tape, whew, like real competitive juices off the tape, and he carries himself like one of those guys, okay? I think he's going to fit in well with what they do at Arizona State. I do think there is some guys who are very comfortable throwing Nike footballs or some guys who ain't picked one up, and that was one of those. That ball was shaky all week long, okay, just in terms of wobbly. And, again, football nerdiness, I'm talking real ball here. If you've not thrown a Nike ball, you don't know what I'm talking about. They're tough to throw if you've never thrown them before.
USC commit Jonas Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, tape be lying. One of them ones. Okay, tape be lying. That tape was, whew. All right, now, I did see some tendency to lean on that left leg and do what we call linear throwing, right? Trying to throw through a phone booth, okay? And standing on that left side, collapsing that left side, and not really being a rotational thrower. I saw some of those signs of it on tape, but there are so many big-time throws on that tape and so much, wow, holy cow, this kid's core is insane. Just bounces off of people, defensive tackles trying to tackle him, and he's just extending pockets, making plays, kind of like the other guy that played at USC for a little while. But the arm is not there when you see it in person. I talked about this on my show when I was out there in LA. Ball's got a little bit of a secondary life to it. It almost like does one of those. It's very, very interesting. I'm not going to say weird, interesting. But I will say this. Lincoln must know something. Lincoln must know something that he thinks he can change because the horsepower is there. The amount of velo is 100% there. We just got to change some things mechanically. So, yeah, you'll notice that in my rankings.
And last one, Washington commit Derek Zammit.
Yeah, how about my man Zammit? How about my man Zammit from New Jersey going out to Washington?
That's an interesting pool.
Right? Very interesting. Must be a big, my man out there? Who's the head coach? Fish? Must be a big Jed Fish fan. Now, Jed Fish does have a propensity to find some cues, all right? Or at least he found Fafita. Found my man Fafita. But I think that's more of finding and landing Tateo McMillan and Fafita come with, you know, that kind of thing. But turn Fafita into a really, really good college quarterback. And you saw the deterioration of that this year down there at Arizona. But an interesting football player from the transition standpoint. But the other thing, I talked about it on our show, highest spin rates of any quarterback there by a wide margin. And I figured out why. Do I have a football? There's super cupper. There. He's a cupper of the football. When he cuts it through his motion, his wrist is cocked like this. All right, so there's an extra rotation to him when he's cutting through the football. So it spins at a higher rate. Now, not as great as some of these other guys 30 and beyond, but that 25 and in, that ball tight and jumps. The reason that spin rate's important, I talked about it on my show from L.A., when our spin rates are high, we cut through the air at a higher rate, meaning wind doesn't affect us as much, weather doesn't affect us as much. Those things are important. Yeah, but dude does look like he's throwing. We used to call them football curveballs to protect your elbow in baseball. We didn't want you getting on that edge and really pulling that shade. We kind of just wanted you to do one of those and protected your elbow when you were younger. Get like a 12-6 angle. It's kind of how it's weird. But it creates higher spin rates. I couldn't do it. I would. It just looked weird. But anyways. All right, you want my Elite 11?
Let's hear it.
Number one, Dia Bell. Number two, Keyshawn Henderson. I feel like there was a clear those two all 3 days. It was like, all right, even from like jump. Oh, like, oh my God, this Diabelle dude. Holy hell. Then Faison Brandon, Landon Duckworth, Bo Bentley. I feel like that's another group of real high ceiling players, but they had some floor moments. Bryson Beaver, real surprise to me. This was the Boise State commit. I think he decommitted. I think in Oregon, because Ryder Lions might be going to BYU, which mm-hmm. I got some stuff on that here in a second. Number 7, Travis Burgess, we talked about. Number 8, Briggs Cherry. Hey, how about a full arm sleeve?
Oh.
Just new ink, too.
Nice.
New ink. Briggs Cherry, I already talked. It was just one we were just talking about. Number 9, Helaman Kasuga. All right, my man, going to Texas A&M. Number 10, Jet Tomala. Number 11, Zammit. Derek Zammit.
So I know that you usually come away with some type of story that you notice, like not during the competition.
The K Klubnik.
Yeah, I listened to the K Klubnik thing.
You ever watch somebody work and just like, damn, they love what they do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That stuff inspires. I obviously love what I do. Mm-hmm. I think you guys love what you do. But man, there's a different kind of seriousness about his work, the way he attacked his work. And I talked about it. I've already tweeted it out. I mean, it's like, hey, I got to wake up tomorrow and work a little harder at what I do watching that shit. That was nuts. He's one of those people.
When he was out there hitting the dudes in the nuts with the footballs?
No, I mean, that's goofing around. But, yeah, that too.
That was
that guy. That guy was something to watch.
Interesting, dude.
Yeah.
Fun content. I mean,
4 million combined followers. He's doing something that we're not doing.
Fun content.
Okay, so let's start this jealousy right across the top.
I enjoy it.
The amount of times that man got hit in his testicles.
Yeah, that is alarming.
I was going to say, I'm one of his followers.
He does. Also, very small human.
Yeah.
Like, no. Yeah, on Instagram, looks small. In person, very small.
What, like 5'6"?
5'5".
Yeah.
5'4". Very small man. But yeah, super athlete. Like, got good movement patterns. Very talented mouth. Probably the most, one of the most talented mouths on the internet.
That's such an
talking about the same guy.
Such an unfortunate title to give someone.
I mean, that's what I watched him do. The first night they were 55 minutes late because he was catching 45 yard marshmallow shots.
Yeah. He was on America's Got Talent for it.
He's got one of America's most talented mouths.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was stepping over bounds.
So says Simon Cowell.
Unfortunate title.
Who are we talking about? Marshmallow mouth guy. Thomas Castellanos talking hammered.
Bro.
By the way, make sure you like and subscribe tonight. We're on fire. Thomas Castellanos hammered drunk. I mean, front row Leonard Skinner hammered drunk.
I literally, when I saw this tweet, I had to check the account, check the comments, check to see who was doing it because there's so many parody accounts nowadays that if you just glance at them, they'll get you. No, this was legitimately a quote from Thomas Castellanos. I could not believe it.
I gotta read this. This was insane. I think he got quoted for the Alabama quote, and that one hit the timeline like crack, okay? But this one about the ACC, it's one paragraph quote, okay, that he feeds to Pete Nakos, who we'll talk about in a second. Quote, I'm excited, man. People, I don't know if they know, but if you go back and watch every first game that I've played in, we always start fast. I dreamed of moments like this. I dreamed of playing against Alabama. They don't have Nick Saban to save them. I just don't see them stopping me. And then the ACC. I feel like I tore the ACC up by my damn self for the last 2 years. And now I'm with a squad. I hope people don't think that Florida State is going to be the same team it was last year because we got weapons. People can't just sit back in zone coverage and watch me.
Would you like to hear one of Thomas Castellanos' first game logs?
How many lies are in this, by the way?
Oh, the first game we start fast is like a flat-out lie. I'll read
first game we start out fast. What we got?
We got 138 passing yards for 2 touchdowns and 1 interception with 9 rushing attempts for 67 yards and a touchdown. Would you like to know
Modest.
The results of this game?
Ew.
An overtime loss to Northern Illinois.
Hell yeah.
And then the next year, they played at Florida State.
Hold on, though. Did he have a good first drive, though? He might have started fast.
Well, he completed 46% of his passes that game.
Might have started fast, 138, finished ass.
Good
what you got
Lord.
For me?
Then they played Florida State the next year. They obviously won that game. 106 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, and
he
14
did do some
attempts
work with
for
his legs.
Yeah. And so he had a good game against Florida State last year.
Woo. What is
without that? A squad?
Also, not to do the Florida State. Watch out. all the weapons retreads didn't work out at a high rate elsewhere. Deuce Robinson, Squirrel White. There's a couple more additions that they brought out of the portal from other big-time programs that didn't really pan out at those big-time programs at a high rate.
It's just funny to me considering what his situation was last year, what Florida State's situation was last year, and we're going to call out Alabama, one of the most prestigious brands in college football, saying, like, they don't want to mess with us this year.
So we've obviously all – go ahead.
Let's say, what is the ulterior motive of that? Why would you say something like that? I understand, like, trying to create
so
the hype around
your season. So you can get somebody
to
tweet at you, talk your shit, King, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe because if you genuinely in your heart of hearts think you're going to beat them and you do, you look like the man afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, this is Pavia kind of did the same shit.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, well, he did after he beat Bama.
But Pavia's got credos.
Mm-hmm. He beat Bama.
Yeah. He got credos.
Like, this guy got benched at Boston College.
Yes.
For turnover prone problems.
And now he's saying he's going to beat Bama too.
So we've all done these interviews before, right?
Yes.
Some of them live, some of them on camera, a lot of them on voice memo. But either way, we're hunting quotes. Yeah. That's what we're doing. And I hope it was on video. I wish they had it, like, historically documented. Because I could just imagine the look on Pete Nakos' face when Buddy starts shit-talking Bama. And then it's like, I'm going to shit-talk Bama, and I'm going to jump up off this top rope. I nut-dragged the ACC for 2 years. Did y'all watch me? I couldn't imagine the look on Nakos' face.
Probably a face of disbelief, like, who the hell media trained this guy?
Bill O'Brien quotes are nuts. Did you see those?
No.
He basically
classified I got benched as we had a C&I difference. We saw things a little bit differently. But it looked like he saw your replacement. That was what was wild to me. All these quotes. But anyways, Nakos has gone from agent talker to now one of the biggest graphic quote pullers I've seen. It's like multiple weeks he's done this as well. Brody is versatile. This would be like if Shams all of a sudden turned into Taylor Rooks. You know what I mean? Like Shams breaking all the news on contracts and then all of a sudden sits down with a superstar and just has him talking crazy. I'm about to win 6 chips. Crazy. Mm-hmm. Only Taylor Rooks can do that to you, and apparently Pete Nakos.
Yeah, I hope it goes well for him.
I would imagine that we don't get much more of Thomas Castellanos in front of a mic.
Yeah, probably going to be a minute before the FSU media gets him as well, I would imagine.
What an insane, bro.
Crazy. Should Tennessee be worried?
I think so. I even asked some Tennessee people that I know of, hey, is this normal? Is this like normal?
Are y'all slow builders?
Like, is it normal for Tennessee to have 9 commits in the late parts of June? And I got a quick answer of no. Like, typically, they said that this time when they had Nico committed into their class, they pretty much had the class wrapped up at this point in the year, which they have Faison Brandon committed. He's been committed for almost over a year at this point. So I think it is because there's only 4 SEC programs right now that have less commits than Tennessee does right now. I mean, everybody else seems to be rolling, picking up momentum, and Tennessee has 2 commits in the month of June right now.
So I want to caveat this entire conversation, Tennessee fans, by saying this. They just had one of the biggest OV weekends to finish off OV weekends that any SEC school has had, including a second visit. I believe the only school that Savion Hyder visited twice, an unofficial visit before his OV started, and then he came back for the OV this past weekend. Yeah. So that's a massive one. I don't know who leads there, though. Like, there's no indication. And every time someone tries to indicate who's leading, Savion Hyder's, like, out here on social media calling them full of shit. So I'm not going to be the one getting clipped by Savion Hyder today. But 2 visits in 6 weeks.
It's a good sign.
It's a great sign. Okay. Another Braden Roos, the linebacker from Kell High School.
Yep.
3 important OVs back-to-back-to-back for him. I believe it was Texas, Alabama, and then finished off with Tennessee. Having interviewed that kid, having known his family for a while, it seems to me like Tennessee's in the lead there. So that's a 4-star high-ranked kid. I think he's a top 150 kid.
Yeah, he is.
In the consensus rankings. So there's momentum there. Another Georgia kid, if I had to tell you right now where's Brandon Anderson, the North Cobb offensive lineman going, probably going to end up back with Tennessee where he was committed. Pulled back off that commitment because he wanted to take some OVs. who doesn't want free trips and great food? Sure. I'm with you. Go take the visits. So there is, I think there's light at the end of the tunnel. However, this is a program that based off talking to the rest of the conference and knowing how other people think or view them and how other people look at Tennessee, Tennessee is known for a program that normally scouts ahead. Mm-hmm. They normally start their process way earlier, okay? A sign of this in this class, they locked up Faison Brandon before any other school locked in their quarterback. That's normally how they operate. So looking up in June, almost July, and you only have 9 commits, that is like, hey, whoa, right? I'm with you. However, when you talk to Tennessee people, I text before the show, because when before I come to this, I want to not give you the opportunity to tell me what you think, but just tell you what I'm going to talk about, and you give me your side. I just laid out mine. Here's how they view it, right? Tennessee thinks that there's a lot of changes left to be in this class. Tennessee seems to me to be banking more on these rules fitting to change some shit this class and banking on that. They think there are bigger moves to be had.
Yeah, and I was trying to compare it to what does this measure up with for Josh Heupel for previous classes. Look, they're obviously not going to finish inside the top 5 or top 7. I don't think they ever have, though. The baseline for it's been a top 15 class with 1 5-star recruit and about 20 to 25 commits. And if you look at it, they already have 2 5-star commits in this class. They're about halfway to that 20 to 25 number. So the reality is it's really a quantity issue right now. It's not the quality of commits are going down. They're not losing these battles that they're consistently getting in. So, yes, it is alarming, but we've seen within weeks teams go from, hey, they only have X number of commits, so they just rattle them off.
I will say this. I overheard about 7 of those quarterbacks. They're all hanging around talking shit at the end of the event or towards the end. There's a lot of lingering time in the last couple of days. And I overheard a conversation about one quarterback saying that another school is broke. You're losing commits because you're broke. And then the other 5 quarterbacks in the little schmidgen, a little powwow, started roasting Buddy. You're an idiot. We all have the same amount of money now. There's a cap. You're an idiot. All right. Over and over and over again, roasting this kid. All it told me was these players who are the highest valued athletes in the recruitment process are obviously being told that there is a cap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what I took away from it. Now, you listen to this today. Don't ask me how the hell USC is doing what they're doing. I ain't got a damn clue. Because USC just tied up $2.5 million in a defensive end and already got $10 million tied up in a tight end. So I don't know what the hell they got going on out there, but everybody else seems to be playing upon the rules or whatever rules we think are coming out, or at least telling these kids that they're about to.
Hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, bottom line, I don't think it's time for Tennessee fans to be worried yet, but slightly just like, hey, what's going on here?
I'm a little bit worried. The Tristan Givens going to Texas A&M's like, oh, hey, oh. Now, Texas A&M just went on a run.
I think if
just went on a run, ironically, right before July 1st, not pointing any fingers.
I was
just
saying, I think if you
not pointing any fingers,
if you get to late July, early August, and you have still what 10 to 11, maybe 12 commits, then it's time like, all right, hey, what the hell is going on here? But they could very easily rattle off 5 or 6 commits and jump up. And by the way, the only school that has the same amount of commits as them and is ranked higher is Oregon, so they're in good standing to get 2 or 3 commits and skyrocket up the rankings.
But we know what Oregon does. We know Oregon's a 14-14 program. We know they're going to take 14 high school kids that are elite, top 200 players, and then they're going to take 14 transfers. Tennessee is not that.
Nope.
Tennessee, I think, went 21-6 last year. 21 high school players, 6 transfers.
Mm-hmm.
My memory serves me correct. So this ain't one of those. We don't expect them to be heavy participants in the portal.
Yeah.
Not normally. Which is good, by the way. I don't want you building. Not an SEC program. I understand why Oregon builds their roster that way. They have a 5-hour radius that tells you they're not consistently going to recruit 28 blue chippers. So go buy 14 and then go buy 14 transfer players.
It was just something I happened to notice when kind of looking throughout the recruiting classes today of like, oh, 9 commits for Tennessee. Then my mind was like, I feel like I haven't seen too many commits for them in a month where it seems like everybody's just stockpiling up on kids.
So fan base, worrisome, in-house staff, ain't sweating it.
Figured.
Which is about right. Now, I will say this. You look through the top 100 players, ain't too many of them left.
No, there isn't.
Not a ton, no.
The text I got kind of insinuated they're going to get busy. You know, they're gonna work on some stuff. A little flippage, maybe.
Mm.
So, we'll see there. I think they had an Auburn commit on campus this weekend, an edge rusher. So, I mean, they're working. Like I said, they have 20 guys.
That's the school trying to flip recruits from.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's the school to try to flip recruits from right now.
And I think you said before the show, they've got more 5-stars right now than Georgia does.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Tennessee has more five stars on their signing class or committed to them than Georgia does
right
now.
And it's the offensive lineman and Faison, right?
Yep.
Yes.
The offensive lineman is pretty damn good. In-state kid, too. So there you go. Locking it up. So how about that? CFP format back to the drawing board. You got news on this?
Basically, just
make sure you hit that like
thank
button.
God.
Yeah.
That was my take with it. Like, this entire news of the longer this gets dragged out, the more the SEC drags their feet, the more the Big Ten tries to get things done, the more the Big 12 and ACC try to get their voices in. It's better for the sport of college football because I think we've gotten in too much of a habit as a sport as a whole of trying to just throw solutions at things. Let's go to 12. Let's go to conference realignment. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do that. I feel like college football has changed more in the last 5 years than it had the previous 10.
20.
Exactly. So you could
I'd
just
go back to 1998 when we transitioned to the BCS model.
Right. So, I mean, from the BCS to the college football playoff, there wasn't that much change. Mm-mm. We've gone through so much in the last 5 years. So I'm fine with the fact that the SEC
and even then,
to...
like, that change was, hey, the writers are no longer going to decide who plays for the national title. The computer is.
Yeah.
That was the only change.
Mm-hmm. And you got a couple.
And we're going to name it the national title game. Mm-hmm. Used to. At the end, after bowl season, they tried to match up 1 vs. 3 or 1 vs. 2, who the Riders thought were their two best teams, and then whoever won that bowl game, they would announce.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's how Alabama has like 100 national championships because the local tire and auto shop claimed that they were the national title winner. There's like 7 of those that are very controversial.
Conspiracy.
That's also why from like 1932 to like 1998, there are multiple years where several teams claim a national title.
Oh, yeah, co-champion. Mm-hmm.
Georgia Tech and Colorado share the same 1990 national title.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth down.
I think I think the biggest part of the news with this is, one, the SEC probably isn't going to 9 conference games
after all.
Got a big dub. Yeah, that's a big dub. It seemed like that they were going to be peer pressured into this, but now they're reconfiguring strength of schedule.
It's because of us.
Ah.
It's because of us. It's because we picked up our shield, our SEC shield, and we told those Big Ten Northerners who don't know ball that this SEC schedule plenty tough. And guess what? It is decided. Plenty tough.
We are not being the biased allegations.
Well, and I think it's
no, we're not. But I wasn't. You know, look. Here's the deal about me. I am biased. Okay. If thinking that the SEC has more national championship contending football teams than the Big Ten makes me biased, then I am biased. And I'm agreeing with that. I think the thing is that like, when you pick a side here, you are inherently biased. There's a reason why you think that way.
I mean, even saying they're equal
but
is
data's
biased.
On my side. But then the Big Ten homers tell me that data is biased. So, you know.
Well, I think what's ironic, too, about this is they're reconfiguring, like, strength of schedule metrics to where out-of-conference games are weighted more than in-conference games.
Yeah.
And the SEC is like, that we're more than happy to do that when the entire talking point of Big Ten and other conferences is, oh, the SEC just plays all these cupcake games out of conference. They're not playing any legit opponents yet. Like we said, they actually do play out-of-conference opponents regularly every single year. Most of them have annual out-of-conference opponents.
So this dispute means two things. One, no decision on what the new playoff format is going to look like 2026 through 2031 until next year. But I think we all on this show agreed that they were going to wait out the memorandum of superiority before they made any type of decision.
Correct.
Okay, that's what we call it around here on this show. If you didn't know, if you're brand new to this network, the other conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, Notre Dame, and the non-Power Four all agreed that the SEC and the Big Ten get to decide whatever the hell they want to do with college football starting in 2026. I know that sounds like it's unbelievable, but it is the truth. It's in writing. They have signed away all power to the Big Ten and the SEC. That's the thing that I know in 2026 what we're going to. I think all of the SEC coaches and all the Big Ten coaches agree that we need to go to the 4+4+2+2+1+1, whatever nonsense. The 16-team playoff that automatically guarantees 4 from the Big Ten and 4 from the SEC. My bad. Zen digestion.
It is worth noting that a decision has to be made by December 1st, and a temporary one-year format for 2026 is not on the table right now.
Yeah, so whatever happens December 1st will be whatever Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti ultimately decide. Mm-hmm. You brought up a tremendous point about this conference schedule argument that is still waging on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good thing that it's waging on.
Yeah, just let it go on as long as you want. Because the more that the closer you get to a decision being made between these two teams, the closer you are to having a super conference.
Yeah.
The closer you are to basically saying, all right, it's the SEC, it's the Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, sorry, you guys aren't really into this. We're just going to go off and do our own thing. We're going to go here and make all the rules.
I'm telling you right now, it's the only thing we got right now keeping us from a Super League.
Yeah.
Just the drag idea that the SEC thinks they're better than the Big Ten is the only thing keeping us from them to agreeing to marry each other.
Mm-hmm.
We're better than you. And I'm going to keep harping it because I don't want it. I don't want it. You don't want it. I'm telling you right now, you do not want a Super League.
Nope.
You do not want to be watching minor. It's going to feel to you, whether it looks like that or not, it's going to feel to you like a secondary rate of the NFL. Mm-hmm. And then the other college football teams are going to be playing college football while this Super League is out here playing on Saturdays in a major TV conference and doing all the TV rights and CBS and Fox and ESPN. It's going to feel like the NFL 2.0 to you, and you're not going to like it. I'm not going to like it.
No.
Even though I'm gonna cover that. I ain't gonna be covering Coastal. No offense, Coastal. No offense, Eastern Carolina. No offense, Wake Forest. I'm not covering you if y'all get disappeared from the Super League. Because I don't think everyone here is either a Georgia fan or a Power Four conference member that's like cares about football. All right, that's why you're here. There's a Wake Forest fan popping up in today with one R. I'll holler at you. But otherwise, miss me.
Yeah, that would indeed suck.
It would suck. I wouldn't like it. That being said, let's talk about these Big Ten win totals.
Bring it on, baby.
This was difficult, if
yeah,
you ask
it was.
Me. It was not very easy.
I feel like I had a little
App
bit
App State
of
a fan here from the DGD podcast. Point proven. Hey, big App State fan here. I ain't going to lie to you. Big App State fan. Big D2 football fan. I love small caliber football, smaller caliber football. But I go where the dollars are. Sorry.
It's the business model.
I think there was one team on this list for Big Ten win totals that I immediately looked at and I was like, that's definitely a lock.
Hammerlock?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Oregon.
Yeah.
Oregon should
consensus
win.
Consensus lock?
Oregon a consensus lock. At 10 hey, and a half, you better win 11 games.
So they got Penn State on the schedule
mm-hmm.
at Penn State. Every other game on that schedule, apart from maybe USC at home at the end of the year, they're going to be favored by more than a touchdown.
Exactly.
Yes. Maybe by, 10 points.
And by the way, if you beat Penn State, you've got your Mulligan game set up as well. You don't have to go undefeated in this schedule, this win totals. If it was 11.5, I'd be hesitant to take
yes.
it. But yeah. it's 10.5. You get your Mulligan in this game. And honestly, I would feel confident about them beating
Penn State. I was about to say, I got to feel uncomfortable about facing James Franklin in a big game. But then again, I got Dan Lanning on my sideline, so.
He might go fourth down 15 times.
One of those guys is going to get an ugly finger pointed at them at the end of that football game.
Very much.
You can't win big one.
You're the reason we lost.
Yeah. Unless the quarterbacks are just atrocious.
Yeah, that'll be ultimate overreaction game. Yeah.
But even then, it'll be, why are you starting him? Why did you not go to the back?
Well, with Dan, it'll be you can't develop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With James, it'll be you have no weapons. That's why you can't win. So mm-hmm. we already wrote that. We already wrote that bio. It's done.
So that was everyone's lock.
That's everyone's lock. I got another lock for you. I don't see Michigan winning 9 games.
Yeah.
Well, an 8.5 over on this, that's a lot.
I almost put them in my locks, but I ultimately decided to put them in the stay-away category.
They're my stay-away as well.
I understand quarterback play is going to improve, right? We all assume that. However,
from a freshman?
My point, a true freshman, that, by the way, we saw play in the spring game. Mm-hmm. It didn't look like lights out.
Like a true freshman.
It looked like a true freshman.
Yeah.
And I expect to see a lot of – he's a true freshman. I expect to see a lot of high flashes. But there's going to be some floor moments in this season mm-hmm. for Michigan. Hmm? To just guarantee, you got to win 9 games for me to cash this bet? Hell no. Lock, under.
And on top of that.
8-4 is a great season, by the way.
Yeah.
I think
that's
would
what
be
they did last year.
And do they have a better roster on paper than USC right now?
Probably not, no.
Who's like the fourth best team in the Big Ten? Is Michigan the fifth or sixth best team on paper in the Big Ten? And I know on paper don't mean shit, especially with that football program. They play a different brand of football. It's tough. It's good execution. They've limited the line of scrimmage. They're like fifth or sixth in that league.
They're about the fifth, yeah.
Which means they're very sneakable by the middle of that league.
Oh, sure, yeah. And that's why I put them at the stay away because
mm-hmm. yeah.
there's going to be too many games for my liking that are going to be that way of – Michigan's playing who, like Illinois this week or Iowa this week, who you got? Like, that's going to feel like a push to me. It feels like it'd go either way.
Oklahoma, Michigan early in the season, who you got?
I'd take Oklahoma.
I'd take Michigan in the big house.
It's going to be a one-score game, I think.
That's what. But that's the thing, though. It's Oklahoma at home, USC, Ohio State. Everything else is they should be able to win that game. But then again, it's freshman quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't really know how good of a head coach Shurrow Moore is. I know that the team loves playing around him, but
he's a really good coordinator.
We saw some very interesting moments last year from the head coach. I mean, there's a lot of things to take into consideration. By the way, they lost more NFL talent from that 2023 roster. So there's a lot of things to take into consideration that I'm going to stay away.
Chat says USC and Michigan were 15-16, respectively, in the 24/7 talent composite in 24. They're about on par with one another. I think USC made far more additions, though, this offseason via the portal.
I would say so.
Going back to that quick conversation about Michigan-Oklahoma, though, I like Brent Venables versus Bryce Underwood way more in
that
matchup. Yeah, Brett.
Oh, he's going – that's going to hurt.
Yeah.
That's going to be a long day
like
in
him,
the office.
I like him in that matchup way more.
That's a good point. Who are your other locks?
I got Illinois over 7.5.
I took Illinois.
Consensus lock.
Consensus.
We got two of them.
Oh, wow.
Consensus lock, guys.
I didn't expect that one.
I mean, there's eight on this that, I mean, if you lose this game, Mr. Bielema, I'm going to look at you a little funny. Western Illinois, Western Michigan, Purdue. We start our schedule WIU, WMU, Purdue, WU, Washington, Rutgers, Maryland, Wisconsin, Northwestern. Those are all winnable. Like, you should win those football games.
Yeah. I mean, other than Indiana, Ohio State, USC,
yeah.
You can lose all three of those games. You'll
still cash this one.
You'll still cash those ones.
I mean, is it reasonable, if you're in that locker room, if you're Luke Altmyer, you're talking about playoff expectations, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You should be. That should be what your football program has been talking about all offseason. We're going to go compete for a national title.
And I mean, by the way, your school has been circled as the, hey, this is the spoiler team of 2025. They're going to beat a playoff team somewhere along the way. So
schedule, very, very manageable. All right, into the stay away categories.
I got one more lock.
You got one more
lock?
I
got one more too.
You got one more lock?
Yeah. The finding a third lock for me was not easy.
Same.
I ended up falling with Washington. Mm. I think Washington has somewhat of a favorable schedule for them, but I think if you're taking the 7.5 for Washington this year, your tummy going to be feeling like you could crap through a screen door all year. Like, it's going to be that type of battle.
All right. My third lock, Maryland over 4.
It's going to feel like second day Akita.
Ooh, yes.
Yes.
Maryland over 4.5. This is my least favorite one, but let's do it. FAU, NIU, Towson. That should be three wins. We need two more there. So we got Wisconsin. That's been a train wreck lately. UCLA, God knows what they're going to be this year with Nico Iamaleava. Rutgers, they're always kind of bad. Michigan State, maybe. Like, there's got to be two wins somewhere in this schedule. That's why I took the over.
Luke Fickell, the rare football coach who got an extension while also coaching for his job.
Yeah.
No?
Yes.
If he turns in 5-7, maybe.
But I feel like that's
maybe.
Is that the new norm in college football? Because if your coaches are obviously on the hot seat there and they're not at least getting extensions, recruiting's going down the toilet.
Facts.
So
I mean, if you're not signed through 2030 at this point, your ops are telling your recruits he might not be there by the time you're gone.
Yeah, he's going to get fired. He's going to retire.
Yeah.
Stayaways.
Okay. I'm staying away from Penn State because I ranked them number one preseason, but I'm not sweating out James Franklin.
No,
I'm not doing it.
That's literally what I write.
You know what's crazy to me, though? On that coaching tour I took, and I tweeted about this. On that coaching tour I took, the guy, like, I expected people to talk about what Kirby does.
Yeah.
I expected people to talk about what Glenn does. I expected people to talk about how Dan Lanning does things. Like, people are stealing from coaches all the time. It's like the theft or theft of coaching ideas is the number one way to increase your bag, if you will, as a football coach. The amount of people that steal from James Franklin, to me, blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I do this way because this is the way James taught me, or this is the way James taught so-and-so. Or this is the way Franklin does it, and we liked it, so we do it this way. It was crazy to me. Very, very well respected in the coaching community. Go win a big game.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of it is, this is the best team that James Franklin's had on paper. But do you expect him to go 1-1 versus Ohio State and Oregon and not screw up another regular season game that year?
No.
And that's why I'm saying
I put him as a coin toss. Like, I'm fine with just putting a coin toss on that one of like, yeah, they could go 10-2, or maybe they could even go 11-1. I could see both ways, or they go 9-3 and they fall apart.
I'm staying away from Ohio State. That line is 10.5.
Yeah, I didn't.
So I have to win 11 games, and there's Texas, Oregon, and
Michigan
on the schedule.
with a brand new starting quarterback who they haven't decided on yet.
Texas, Penn State, Michigan. Tough. I got tweeted out kind of cooking the – not cooking, but calling into question the Brian Hartline OC experiment, mm-hmm. round one. Ohio State fans seem to have viewed that a whole lot different than the rest of the world did.
How'd they view it?
Like, he never even had control anyways. Like, this is the first time.
Well, I mean,
like,
that's
– that last time didn't count. That wasn't even his team.
That's probably the narrative and, that you got to spin, though.
And then it was no one can win with Kyle McCord.
He just threw for 40. Brown
just
won.
led college football in passing yardage.
Yeah.
So that was kind of nuts. And he had Marvin Harrison.
Yeah.
Which was kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Hey, but you know, I'm a better second shot golfer than I'm a first shot golfer. Give the man a mulligan.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I love a good mulligan.
But apparently, you know, Ohio State fans said it didn't work or didn't actually have the OC title, which this if that's the case, this is the first time he's ever called plays, which I'm sure will go off without a hitch.
With a brand new quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So that those two things alone. Jeremiah Smith can cover a lot of problems, I'm sure, but that
also are we the only show to point out the fact that Ryan Day had so much freedom to actually be a CEO of his football program because Brian Kelly was his OC, that not only did he go on and win a national title, but he was such a micromanager and had so much free time to criticize what everybody else was doing and hold them to such a standard. He ran a defensive coordinator out of town. Dude left. Now, he took a pay raise to go to Penn State, but he was like, Jim Knowles was like, I'm up out of here. I'm good. It was very well documented that Ryan Day and Jim Knowles did not see eye to eye last year, that they were bumping heads. Why was he able to do that? Because he wasn't Waffle House carding all four quarters, wondering about what the next series was going to be offensively. It only confirms what we've always talked about on this network. If you are a head coach that thinks you can still call plays, I got news for you. Ain't nobody winning national titles doing that. Literally, no one. No one has done it. So keep thinking you could be the guy. Maybe you'll break history. Brian Kelly, Chip Kelly, whatever. It was the Kelly guy.
One of the Kellys.
The one who didn't kill a kid.
Oh, my God.
Oh. Yeah, I picked Indiana as one of my stayaways because when I envision Fernando Mendoza in Indiana this season, I think they're 8-4. I think that could be an 8-4 football team. I think that it could be 7-5. I don't really picture them winning 9 games, but if we learned anything about Cignetti, he certainly can coach a team above maybe what they're actually rated on paper or how they look on paper. He can exceed expectations, if you will. So I just put him as a stay away because I don't want anything to do with that 8.5.
My third stay away, because me and Jay will both had Michigan as that. Iowa at 7.5. And the reason for that, Kirk Ferentz. That's all I have to say. I don't need any other reasons, any other logic, historical data. Ferentz.
Hey. What you know about Mark Gronkowski? Excuse me. Yeah, I pronounce that right. Gronkowski? What you know about Mark Gronkowski?
He's probably going to be the next quarterback in the revolving door of complete mid that has been Iowa football for the last 15 years.
I don't know, dude. He averaged 2,800 yards as a jackrabbit the last 3 years as a starter.
Wow. Very good.
That's cool points to anybody who could tell me whose mascot's the Jackrabbits.
South Dakota State.
South Dakota State.
Ball knowers.
FCS ball knower.
Couple ball knowers over here. How
and
about
I
it?
Only know that because like 2 or 3 years ago,
earn
they
your
gave
pay rate, boys.
They gave a Big Ten team everything they could handle. I think it was Minnesota, maybe.
Maybe it was K-State.
It was someone like that.
Yeah. No, it was South Dakota State or North Dakota State who always gave K-State a sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Jackrabbits. My man transferred in, and they talking him up. He got NFL draft profiles. They talking him up. 2,900 yards, South Dakota State, though. Yeah, he lit it up.
We'll see.
6'3", 230.
That's fine and dandy.
Grew out a nice Iowa beard.
Hmm.
Stopped spiking his hair, too. He's really going rugged.
He's losing the drip already. Sounds like an Iowa Hawkeye already.
But you trade in the drip for the rugged when you go play for the Hawkeyes, you know?
I hope he and his punter are on good terms.
I mean, you can't have that shit on throwing it 18 times a game. You just can't.
Yeah, I know.
It's impossible.
Got to save the energy for your waving arm.
Got to. You know, one of those.
Coin tosses.
Coin tosses. Oh, by the way, I'm staying away from USC. I think USC's a 1-8-win season away from being able to fade Lincoln Riley. We're like one decent season away from people buying Lincoln Riley again. It's going to happen.
I had
we're 9 wins. Win 9 games, Lincoln, you'll be back in them top 10 discussions. People are going to be putting you up for NFL jobs. You watch.
Yeah.
It's going to happen again.
I'm as a coin toss, though, because there's like so many schedules or games on the schedule where it's like I can close my eyes and picture them winning or losing that game. Nebraska, Notre Dame,
same.
Iowa, Oregon, Michigan, Illinois, UCLA. Like, I could see them losing or winning all of those games. So it's a coin toss for me.
Nebraska's a coin toss for me at 7.5 wins.
They also are a coin toss for me.
That's touchy.
There's too many questions around. Is Dylan Raiola taking the next step? Is the year 3 rule apply for Matt Rhule? Does Nebraska stop choking one-score games? Can they beat a top 25 team? Like, I don't know the answer. I'm not confident enough to say the answer is no. This isn't the year it happens, but...
How many people you think thought that one-score loss thing stopped for Nebraska? And then listened to our show the other day and was like, shit, they lost 7
They still doing it?
Still doing it? It was like 6 of those last year?
I don't know. I mean, I think because so much emphasis was put on it for Scott Frost's 3-9 season, where I was like,
and it was different. I feel like Scott Frost's Nebraska teams wet down their leg losing those one score games.
Whereas, they found ways to lose.
Whereas Matt Rhule's teams were like eking out one score losses, just like playing it tight.
Yeah.
Like they did against Illinois this year. Like they did against Ohio State this year.
Where it was like, hey, you know, they're not getting killed, and maybe this could be a game.
I mean, even their wins are that way. Like they did, like they got a pick 6 against Colorado and beat them by what, 10? Wasn't that like a 24-17 game?
I remember them
Or did they open up a can?
I remember them
I felt like they opened up a can and then squatted on it.
They did do that. Game. It was like a – the score was 28-10.
Yeah.
But they started
it was like 18-0.
It was 28-0 at halftime, and then they just kind of like
– squatted on it.
We've won this game.
Yeah, Matt ruled it.
I'll have a disclaimer here. At first, I had Purdue as a coin toss. I have since looked at Purdue's schedule – and I am reversing
that. For the Boilermakers?
I'm going to add a fourth lock to my list. They are not winning 3 games this year.
Damn!
They might, like, they got Ball State, Southern Illinois. All right. We might have a fighting chance that day. And then it's USC, Notre Dame, Illinois, Minnesota, Northwestern, Rutgers, Michigan, and Ohio State back-to-back weeks. Washington and Indiana.
Oof.
Boy, Purdue, if you thought you sucked, the Big Ten said, we're just going to go waterboard you, baby. Like, we're just going to make the suffering.
That is the sacrificial lamb of, we need our playoff teams to get a nice, easy dub.
Shit, I thought Ohio State had the hardest schedule in the Big Ten. It's clearly Purdue.
That's horrible.
My God.
USC, Notre Dame, back-to-back weeks, and then you got Michigan and Ohio State back-to-back weeks.
Here's a question. If they lose to Northern Illinois or Southern Illinois or whoever, if they lose one of those games, you have to fire that guy immediately, right? He's a first-year head coach. It's Barry Odom, right?
Yes.
Barry Odom took that job. They're going to be all right.
Yeah, okay.
They're not going to be a laughing stock.
I don't know, man. You're going to win your first two games.
Am I thinking too highly of Barry Odom?
I don't think you're thinking too highly of him.
He's an 8-win guy in Missouri. He's a 10-win guy at UNLV. He should be a 5-win guy at Purdue.
You can get
that roster's bad, man.
That roster is Georgia's JV team. Literally. They got like 7 transfers.
I'm aware.
They got like 7 transfers. I'm aware. That's not a joke. That's like, hey, who couldn't play at Georgia? You're a Boilermaker.
Come on, baby.
Who'd they miss on? Who was a bad eval out of high school that couldn't play at Georgia?
They must be doing something right, because if you're going to get a kid to go from playing in Athens, Georgia, to come on over to Purdue, baby.
Yeah.
Come suck in
home
the
of
cold
the
weather.
Green.
I mean, it's – nah, I ain't going to do that to those kids. It's basically like instead of playing JUCO, you go play for Purdue.
Damn.
Yes.
Damn.
Right, I'm gonna climb back out of it. I'm going to get up out this mud right quick that is Purdue Boilermaker football.
Man,
that's getting it out the mud nowadays.
Now, I will say.
I mean, your JUCO years don't count, so where are you going to get it up out the mud?
Now,
Purdue.
There is no better team in the Big Ten to say, Ohio State's ranked number 1 right now.
Let's
ruin
dreams.
That. So, watch out. But, that's a tough schedule.
UCLA 5.5.
Also a coin toss of mine.
Straight up coin toss. Away from it.
It's basically, is Nico Iamaleava worth one win?
Tells me they're not a 500 football team.
Yeah.
Utah, Penn State, Ohio State, USC. Those are, I feel like, guaranteed losses going into the year. And then the rest of the roster or schedule is a coin toss, powerful football wise.
Like it's truly going to be able to, we're going to see how good Nico is this year. Because they were 5-7 last year. If you go 6-6 or 7-5, great success. But I mean, it's a toss up at that point.
I was out in LA this last week.
Yeah.
That's where UCLA is located, if you didn't know.
Oh, is that what it stands for?
I was Louisiana.
I don't know what the UC stands for.
University of California.
In Los Angeles? Okay. Well, education here.
There you go.
they're letting it go with the anti-Joey Aguilar spin. It's leaky out there.
I mean,
it's like we want people to know that Joey wasn't going to work here anyways. That's why we were going to be active for a quarterback no matter what. Nico just happened to be available.
I mean,
we were going to go add another one. I didn't like the way Joey was working type stuff.
It's kind of gross.
I thought so too. But and it didn't come from their staff. I wasn't told this from their staff. But I was told this from a person who talked to their staff and told me, they told me nothing but bad things about Joey Aguilar. Nothing but bad things. We had to make him go to workouts. We had to tell him he had to go work out with the wide receivers. We had to like check up in on him. Where's he at? Like a whole bunch of negative spin coming out of UCLA about Joey Aguilar.
What would be worse though, if you hear UCLA coming out with those things, or UCLA saying, you know, we like Joey Aguilar, but this former five-star became available and we're like, we got to give him enough money for him to come here.
That's coach speak. That's what should be being talked about. We just thought this was an upgrade. That's why we brought him in. That's what he tells the media, by the way. When Deshaun Foster talks to the media, when their staff talks to the media, that's the way they talk. Behind closed doors, it was like, we were gonna hunt competition anyways. We're going to bring somebody else in because we didn't know for a fact if this was going to be the guy.
Interesting. Sleazy. I don't like it.
The tape was good, and we've gone through it. Yeah. We liked it. We think he plays quarterback. Mm-hmm. There's some limitations. We think he – it's a promising text message. It's a promising text message, boys.
I like that.
I mean, it could be bad news, but
– well, now my mood is ruined.
There is news on the horizon. That's the news.
That doesn't mean it's promising.
Something's coming.
All right. Well,
We'll find out.
That's
good. What are we doing? Transition to the local.
I believe, yeah.
Let's do that. We got a whole another hour coming up, and it's a great one.